What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday. I'm glad we could all meet again. There is so much that happened over the weekend. A lot of it to do with Francis in the PFL. Makes me wonder, who is the best heavyweight in the world right now? What do you want to see Francis do? And that's before we get to the big pay-per-view topped off with Max versus Topuria. Guys, we can't waste any time. Let's begin here. What do you do now with Ngannou? And did anybody care about this fight? Now, that wouldn't come in for being a jerk perspective. The numbers on PFL are not going to be great, but they can't be. Fury versus Ngannou is the greatest sporting event I've ever witnessed. That's true. From a what should happen, what's going to happen, makes sense logical standpoint, that was one of the greatest sporting events I have ever seen. Like, if there's anything you're going to watch and then be inspired as a human being, hey, dreams can come true. I can do it. If I have the courage to try and I've got the grit to put some time in. Most of those things are just words. Most of those things are things that you believe to be true because you've been told it your whole life and you still haven't realized that you were told that your whole life just to keep you involved and part of the program. And it's a much more uplifting message than the opposite side of that coin. It's not overly a reality. You have a certain DNA, and that DNA can take you only so far. And I'm just sharing that because the numbers were terrible for Tyson versus Francis, but they weren't terrible because the world didn't care about baddest man on the planet. That was a great marketing tool. And they didn't care about the sitting MMA champion heavyweight versus the sitting boxing champion of heavyweight. The numbers were terrible because it was on at 11 in the morning. I was with Mark Andrus and we were planning to watch it. That night, I get a text from Kevin Ioli who's told me the show began and Francis walks at 1:50 in the afternoon. The show had already began when I get informed. So I'm just sharing with you, like, did anybody care about Francis's fight? Well, you're not going to see the world's greatest numbers. And you think, why aren't people in the crowd? Well, it was 3 a.m. Something like this, I read. And then the pay-per-view is at a bizarre time. And then you have Francis that goes out and put on what I believe to be his best performance. And I say that because I know what he was up against. I know those emotions. It's a very rare club. I happen to be in the club with Francis. It's a very rare club. And I'm just sharing, like, to get and go and put these things aside and deal with all these things in addition to the pressure of a potential imminent death of your career. And that's where Francis was. Had Francis got cleaned up, if the same thing that Francis just did happened in reverse, he gets dominated, cleaned up, and sent home in less than one round. It is a wrap to the entire career. So when Francis goes out and does that, I'm blown away by the double leg. I'm blown away that he has shown a new skill that he picked up in the practice room, and he was smart enough to scout his opponent enough to know it's safer in this realm. I was impressed by that. I'm going to be confronted with, hey, Chael, what impressed you about Francis hitting the most basic takedown of a double on a guy who's never had a wrestling match or a documented competitive grappling match? That's a fair question. It's unfair in many ways to Ferreira, but it's a fair question. How impressed should I be that Francis took down the only heavyweight to fight for a championship in any organization in the last two decades that was not a black belt in jiu-jitsu? How impressed should I be? How impressed should I be that Francis, a non-wrestler, scored a takedown against another guy who's a non-wrestler? Exactly what kind of bounce should he get? And it's a big question in terms of what's next for Francis. Because if anybody has demonstrated that he has options, it's only Francis. Francis is the only champion in a major organization or any organization that gets television time who also contractually has the legal right to box. So it's interesting. I happen to be in Riyadh. I got a call, Bellator versus PFL. They invited me to come to this one, which is an invitation I would have loved to accept prior engagement. And they actually build an arena in a parking lot. And it's the parking lot of the arena where Francis fought Joshua. I just think that you might find that interesting, because even I, when I was there, and it was so beautiful, it was so incredible what they did, even I'm wondering, why don't we just go into that building? Right? Like, it's not like Kiss is playing or the Rolling Stones, right? It was empty. Why don't we just walk into that building? I tell you that purely to make you go, that is kind of funny. So Francis is a big deal over there. They like him and they like working with him. We here in the States had problems with what Francis's idea of showing integrity to your contract versus what a U.S. organization believes is showing integrity to your contract. But they get along with him very well over there. And I just share that because what's next for him, everything was on the table, including retirement. Francis, just that I know of, just that I know, well, let me do it real fast. 10, 12, 5, and 2. That's impossible math to do. That's impossible to know at 10 plus 12 plus 5 but 2. But whatever that answer is, I'm talking million. And that's just that I know. Just that I know that I can tell you for sure 100% that he has brought in the last, what has it been, guys, 19 months? So now you have a choice. You got an old man that everybody's coming for. And the world really just has one fight that they want to see for that old man. That's not his fault. Well, yeah, it is kind of his fault. He does a terrible job of promoting. But I'm just sharing for you that's not going to happen. He walked from that fight. That was John Jones. So now you have other fights that could be meaningful. They could be hard. They could be the one that bites him in the ass. But do you want to see him? And that's what I'm speaking to. I'm asking you. I think that Francis versus Tyson Fury works. I do. I think Francis coming off this tremendous victory with Tyson coming off a loss, I think it works. But does it work well enough to cover the spread? No, not even remotely in a fantasy, does it? Okay, great. Is there anyone else for Francis to box? No, I don't think so. But if he does box, it's for sure going to be a financial loss anyway. So what difference does it make? I'm asking you. I'm not answering this. I'm asking you. Now, to come over to the PFL, and by the way, to take that financial loss with that structure that's set up, openly we realize is not going to change things. It's not going to take opportunities from other guys. It's not going to cut down on the opportunity of doors staying open. I don't know if that's true in the PFL. Like, that is a very large chunk to pay a guy. $5 million when it's $5 million the opposite way. There is nowhere that spread gets covered. Nowhere. When I fought, I made a lot of money, guys. I could cover the spread just with the live gate. Just with the live gate. I got $4 million the first time that I fought Anderson. You guys heard me say it's more. There's your real answer. But we did a $7.6 million gate. Just the gate. I haven't got into sponsors and pay-per-views. And I'm just sharing with you, that is not what's happening with Francis. It does matter. It does. And there isn't a rightful challenger. Problemo was a tough challenge, but it was the right move by the PFL, because Problemo should have and could have won. Oh, and by the way, wants to stay active. So if he could take that shine off Francis and you got him and you run with it, that's a game that a promoter has to play. But now you're in a spot where I got to spot Francis $5 million for his next fight. I got to give his opponent $2 million. I have to. I'm $7 million, which I cannot cover at a gate or on a pay-per-view spread. Do I want to use him, or do I hope that he chooses to go and box next and I can buy myself some time? It's a very fair question. And what does Francis want to do? What are we going to do? Well, that's the point of the piece. And Francis doesn't do the world's greatest job of communicating with you, the audience, or having his thumb on the pulse, but he's surrounded by some people that do. So let's kick him off here, guys. Let's start brainstorming some ideas. You got two sports to choose from: boxing, MMA. What do you want Francis to do next? Has struck again. Ilya is turning into a bit of a gold mine. I gotta tell you. I have something to talk about every day, thanks to Ilya Topuria. In exchange for him giving me that, I will give him airtime. I mean, this is the exchange, right? It's a commodity. Some guys understand it, some guys don't. What did Ilya give me today? He said within the first 10 seconds of the fight, he might have said the first 5 seconds, he is going to do to Max what Max did to Justin Gaethje, which is he's going to draw the line and say, bring it on. And he said, if Max goes for that, he will knock him out instantly. She might have put it 30 seconds. All right. Max responds. Now, this is interesting and a surprise for me because Max said, I am the blessed champion, the baddest. I am the blessed mother effer. I am the baddest mother effer. I am not the dumbest mother effer. I'm not going to do it. Whoa. That caught me off guard. I thought Max would take that deal all day long. Now, I don't suggest that they walk out there and they actually do it. The rules they're fighting under are called the Unify rules, not under what we said in the media rules. I still was surprised that Max said that he wanted to do it. Do you guys see it that way? I mean, that's a concession. That's okay. When a guy knows what he's getting into, I like that. I like Max in this fight. That hasn't changed because of this statement, but that statement did change, didn't it? What do you guys think that meant? Let's hear it again. Ilya Topuria says, I will meet you in the middle and we are going to trade fisticuffs. Let's do it right now. You want to get in a fight? Let's get in a fight right now. Don't make me faint you, flinch you, slip inside, cut you off, do all this gamesmanship and ringsmanship. You want to fight? Let's fight. It's your idea. It's your rules. You challenge Justin Gaethje, he stepped to the line. I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to take your rules and I'm going to bring them to you. And Max said no. Max didn't only say no. See, I could have lived a much more Max answer is the one that I just gave you. A much more maxed answer. A much more like, if I had given you two options and said, which one did Max say? The one that he actually did, which is no, I'm not the dumbest mother effer. Or the one that I gave you, which is, well, the rules we're going to fight under are unified. And, you know, we'll see what happens out there. And we'll see if he actually does it. And if he does, you know, I guess we'll have to figure that at that time. And that's not what Max said. Max is saying he would have to be a dumb mother effer to step to the line and trade with Ilya Topuria. I did not know that. I did not see that way. I have been told by the greatest mind in pugilism, Teddy Atlas, that Ilya Topuria is the best boxer we have. All of MMA. Okay. But I have seen with my own eyes, as have many other men, Brian Ortega comes to mind. The very last opponent in Justin Gaethje comes to mind. That Max on his feet with his output, with his chin, with his durability. Did you see the Calvin Kattar fight? If you're anyone that's against MMA because MMA is too brutal, if that's like a word that you think that we should run from as brutal, because MMA is brutal, but if you think that that is a reason to not do something, that's the fight that you submit to the jury. Max Holloway was finding Kattar, and Kattar is so damn tough, he let himself be found. And now I'm being told that Ilya Topuria could put Max down inside of 30 seconds by Ilya Topuria. And Max saying that if he accepted those terms, he would have to be the world's dumbest mother effer. I mean, that's a really interesting thing to say. And there again, I don't have a problem. I don't see that as a weakness by Max. I don't see it as a weakness that he's aware of what he's getting into and that there's certain places he doesn't want to fight. I'm just telling you, I have never seen anybody, and I see many good men try. I've never seen anybody plant their feet with Max and get the jump on him. That includes Jose Aldo. Max is just a master of range. He just is. You guys ever see that old cartoon? A silly cartoon. Take on this bigger guy and he getting a whole head of steam. And the bigger guy just puts his hand out like that. Puts his hand right on the forehead of the little guy. And the little guy, boy, he's swinging. But he doesn't touch anything. He's too far out. Have you ever seen that? Because that's real. That is literally real. John Jones, every time when John puts a finger in somebody's eye and people get mad at him, he was reaching for his eye. No, he's not. John's reaching to do that cartoon. He throws a punch and then he puts his hand right here on your head. His reach is so long, if he's touching your head, you cannot touch him. It's just the ballistics of the matter, right? Like, there's certain angles that if you understand ballistics, you don't have to worry about getting shot at from. There's places you could go as long as he stays up in that sniper box, you can have your lunch. There's just, there's not a way. And Max is saying he'd have to be a dumb F. Why? What part of it? What part of it? Because Teddy Atlas says, of the things that Topuria does well, his ability to get inside and create an angle. That's very advanced stuff. That is very advanced. To know how to get inside, to have the ability to have the eyes, have the rhythm and timing to do it, and then boom, and create an angle. That's what Mike Tyson would do, guys. You ever like watching Mike shadow box, but Mike's always moving? It's not just his hands. He's one of the few heavyweights when he shadow boxes, and he's very fun to watch because he's doing something different. Well, that's creating angles. It's very hard to do. It's very hard, boom, to find that power and know to get offline. Coach Clayton calls that rob a store and don't stick around and wait for the police to come. When you rob the store, you got to get out of there. Boom. Right? When you assault a guy, you got to get out of there. Easy to say, very hard to do. So is that what Max sees? Does Max have a problem? Would Max be a dumb mother effer to box with Topuria? Or is it specifically to box with Topuria early in the first 5 seconds? That's what he was challenged to do. Or is it specifically to come and put your foot on the line like he and Justin Gaethje did? What part of it is stupid? What does Ilya Topuria see that he's going to go challenge for it, by the way? Which is, it's a tough spot. Even though Max has said, I'm not going to accept the challenge, Ilya must now, within 5 seconds, walk out and draw a line. He doesn't have a choice. He said he's going to do it. That's interesting to me. That's great commentary to me. But Max sees something different. Max doesn't think that early, perhaps, that he can keep that range. Or Max doesn't have the ability to keep range because the entire, if you're taking this challenge literal, which Justin Gaethje did, you're stepping right on a line. You're keeping your foot there, right? The Dave Feldman rules. I don't know. But the BMF, the greatest 45-pounder, the most successful 45-pounder, the current BMF and current number one contender for the 45-pound championship, this weekend's main event, says he's not going to do it and that he'd have to be the dumbest mother ever to do it. So it takes my ability to come out and tell you that Max can go anywhere with Topuria. He can fight him anywhere. Max can beat him anywhere. It takes my ability away from me. And as the week gets closer, we're going to give an assessment of this fight. And that, to a degree, is going to affect my opinion and yours. And it just might have upped the confidence of Ilya Topuria. Chimaev versus Whitaker. My prediction. I haven't thought this again. Who do you guys think is going to win that fight? Who's going to win that fight? And do you want to know? You guys remember The Godfather? So he is defiant, Joel. Defiant. This fight will not happen. He is angry that the UFC has not yet told us who the backup is going to be. He believes they have a backup. He believes there is a backup quietly licensed and in the Middle East right now. And I just couldn't imagine who that would be. And he believes that person's going to take on Whitaker. And I don't believe any of that talk around Chimaev is fair, by the way. I don't. I don't think he gets the yips. Do you know that expression? That is from a Seinfeld episode. And it had to do with golf. But this guy can't golf. He gets the yips. He gets the yips. Oh, you know, the pressure gets to him. He gets the yips. He got to pull out. I don't think any of that is fair to Chimaev. I remember a time when Chimaev had to pull out of a fight against Leon Edwards because he was in COVID on a respirator thinking he was going to die. I remember that. I remember another time when Chimaev fought a man, cut 15 pounds to weigh in 6 days later, and fought another man. I don't know anything about this scared Chimaev that you speak of. I know about Chimaev, who is a make-believe figure at 170 pounds, ready to challenge for the world championship. They want to give him an opportunity. He was only 24 years old and only had 5 fights, and Dana was actually having to answer these questions for why they wouldn't put him in there with Kamaru Usman. Kamaru Usman is no longer champion. They move him into Chimaev's division on 8 days' notice. I don't remember Chimaev flinching about that. I don't even remember Chimaev trying to get credit for going out and doing it. He just kept his mouth shut and did what he said he would do, which is fight on a certain night. I don't know where this is coming from. I really don't. And I know that narrative is out there. And I do know in Chimaev's last scheduled fight, I understand that. And the one before that. But the one for that was the payoff for fighting Kamaru Usman. That drew him into Vancouver, Canada, against Sean Strickland for a world championship. He had to say no. He had a broken hand. What do you want? So then he gets drawn into Whitaker, and he says yes. And from what we're told from his side, the story they would like us to believe is that he overtrained and in that process got sick. I believe that. Do you not? I believe that. But some people do not. All of this in conjunction with the ongoing story that Chimaev finally came out and did confirm that he can't get into the U.S. Well, this fight's not in the U.S. It's in the Middle East. And if you think he's got the yips, and you think he's going to pull out of the Whitaker fight, and your evidence for that is he's already done it once, what exactly are you saying? Do you believe that Whitaker is a harder task one night than fighting two men in two different weight classes over the course of a week? Do you believe that is a harder thing to do, fighting Robert Whitaker, than it is to face Kamaru Usman, who is somebody that you looked up to because you were 24 and new to a division of which he was king? What exactly are you saying? And I don't think there's a backup fighter. I don't think Chimaev's pulling out of this fight. And can Whitaker be the one to stop Chimaev's undefeated streak? Now, here's your problem, okay? There's a built-in belief that to beat Chimaev, you got to out-wrestle Chimaev. And that is where all the talk of Bo Nickel comes in. But you don't have that right. To beat Chimaev, you've got to stop him from out-wrestling you. That's not the same thing. Robert Whitaker is a top three best counter-wrestlers in the history of the sport. Juiced up, Jose is the number one counter wrestler. Everything that George St. Pierre was to offensive wrestling, how George could come out and take down anybody, even though he never had any wrestling matches. He could take down Johnny. He could take down Koscheck repeatedly. He could take down Hughes. He could take down anybody. Okay. Juiced Jose was the opposite, but the same. He had the same amount, which was 100%. Effective ability to stop people from taking him down. Chad Mendes shot on Jose one time and Jose popped his hips. He didn't underhook him. He didn't sprawl. He popped his hips into Chad and knocked Chad backwards. Jose was, oh, Juice Jose, counter wrestling. Oh my gosh. Very, very, very special thing. But I'm bringing you that as a great example, guys. Because Robert Whitaker's a kickboxer. Oh, by the way, he's a goddamn good kickboxer. In fact, he's only been out kickboxed twice ever. Once was a technical fight against Adesanya, who was a little more technical for whatever reason. Speed, length, there were some things, but fine. And he got out brawled in the kickboxing realm by Dricus. That's it. You can't add a number three to the list. So let's imagine that Robert is a better kickboxer, right? Because you're not just, if you say it's Chimaev, you're not only saying how great Chimaev is, you're also saying that he's one of the best to have ever done it. And Whitaker truly is. Whitaker will truly hit and do damage, kick and do damage, more men than anybody else you can find. And I'm telling you that because Robert Whitaker is a son of a buck to take down. Ask Kelvin Gastelum, who takes everybody down. Ask Yoel Romero for 10 rounds. He got Bobby Knuckles down twice. in 10 rounds. And I'm just sharing that with you. Like, at a minimum, we're going to see a component in this match that we're not expecting to see. Now, if Chimaev can go tackle Whitaker, which he will try to do, Chimaev does not believe what I'm saying to be true. He does not respect Whitaker's ability to the point that he's not going to go out and go for it. He's going for it. So if he gets him down, okay, great. We're gonna see something different. But the likelihood of him getting him down over and over and round after round, guys, it really is very small. And what happens then? Well, first time St. Pierre ran into somebody that he couldn't just go take down was Matt Hughes. And St. Pierre showed us the world how good his striking was. Threw a head kick, took a world championship away quickly. That might be what Chimaev does. Chimaev got in a fisticuff with Burns and turned out to do some things we didn't know he could do. Burns hurt him one time. Chimaev got those legs back under him, started returning fire. I mean, it turned into a dogfight. I'm just sharing for you. Like, this is a very special match. And who's going to win this fight is not easy. You've got the undefeated Chimaev who's fighting what we'll call home. You got home territory. You can call it that. And did some different training, returned literally home to the coach that he had up until he was the age 17. I can just tell you, that matters. That matters. There's guys out there, right? They say behind every great man, there's a great woman. And that's a very beautiful thing to say. But for sure, behind every great man is a man. And some of the real greats don't talk about it. They don't show it. Every guy has a guy. And if Chimaev is returning to the coach of the Abbey 17, I'm just going to offer for you, you're going to see one of the best versions of Chimaev that you've seen before. But that's still Robert effing Whitaker. He will beat your ass. He will keep you on your feet, and he will begin to bludgeon you. I'm also not sold on Chimaev's size. I know some of you are, and you're saying that he's pulling pretty hard to get down to 185, and 170 is long behind him. I'm getting other information. And I do know that he considered a title fight all the way at 170. I know that that was considered recently. UFC 300. But there was travel issues that ended up not happening. I'm just not sold on how big he is at 185. I know how big Whitaker is at 185. I supported the concept of Whitaker going up to 205. I actually got met with resistance by Robert Whitaker. I'm just sharing for you, this is a really different fight than you might think. And I think it is possible that one guy whips the other guy's ass, goes right through him. But I think that that is much more likely to be Robert Whitaker than it is Chimaev. And that is where we're disagreeing. But that's still a fairly unlikely thing to happen. You're going to have a long, drawn-out brawl here. I'll give you my prediction. I promise you I will. That's coming. But I want to hear from you. Who's going to win that fight, Chimaev or Whitaker? It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're going to get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over here at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Chael. That's Shopify.com/Chael, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Chael to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Chael. Hey guys, I gotta jump in on something. This whole Rachik versus Ankalaev nonsense, this is one of the most misunderstood fights that I think I have witnessed. Now, let me put my cards on the table, okay? Anthony Smith, one of my close friends and my coworker, that Anthony Smith, fought them both, has great things to say. But his opinion of what's going to happen is wildly important. Has he not given it to you yet? Is that what the problem is here? Have you guys not heard from Anthony Smith yet? Anthony had a very detailed breakdown of this fight. Now I don't know. Now I'm starting to, you're making me think that you don't know, which means you either didn't hear him say it or he hasn't said it yet. So now I'm wondering what part of this that I can break down, but what an incredibly helpful thing to have. You have Anthony's opinion, the guy that shared the ring with both of them. I mean, I watch those fights. Those books look like pretty hard fights. The Ankalaev fight, though, according to you guys, from what our whole community was saying, all the pundits, the Ariel Helwanis of the world, was one heck of a lot closer than it was supposed to be. Anthony ends up breaking his foot on his own attack, step in and stop the contest. We didn't get to see that much of it. But for what we did see, had we been able to extend that over 15 minutes, I'm not sure who would have won. Like that was a lot closer match than you think. You've also created this narrative on Ankalaev, who is awesome. Ankalaev is awesome. I'm just sharing for you. You've created this, and you need to go look up his record because you're not going to find it on SureDog. He did Combat Sambo, which is as close, and that's what Fedor came through. That's as close to MMA without being MMA. Like, if you want a background, Khabib, these guys. Marab had just gone and done a tournament of this. I mean, I'm sharing, like, Combat Sambo, as far as getting experience and getting used to it, it's very, very close to MMA. And it's from an amateur perspective. They even do a level of that in the high school, in the education systems in Russia. So, I mean, Moldovsky comes to mind. Moldovsky, a heavyweight threat. Ankalaev beat him. And Nemkov, who's amazing and nothing short of that, fought Ryan Bader, fought Corey Anderson, fought Phil Davis. Ankalaev beat him. And I'm bringing that to you because you won't find that on SureDog. Like, Ankalaev is incredible. Make no mistake, when I come out and try to correct you on some things on Ankalaev, what I'm here to tell you is he's not the wrestler you keep trying to tell me he is. He's not. Now, that may not play into the Rajic fight as much, but it sure as hell plays into the Alex Pereira fight, which is where the winner of Rajic and Ankalaev is going. The winner of Rajic and Ankalaev and the importance of this contest are wildly underpromoted. It shouldn't just be if Ankalaev wins, if Rajic wins. Whoever wins is fighting Pierre. Not just they should. I'm telling you right now, that is who Pierre will fight next if Pierre stays at 205 pounds. I predict for you Pierre's next fight is against Tom Aspinall. I'm going to stand on that. But I'm telling you, to have such a significant fight and then to misunderstand it, DraftKings, my partners, right now, I can't believe this. I actually can't believe this. They've got Ankalaev the favorite, minus 380. That is so wildly wrong. They have Rajic, an underdog, plus 300. So for every $1,000 you bet on Rajic to win, if he wins, you get three. You get your investment back, and you get three. And I'm not giving you gambling advice. I'm telling you, that's going to be an ass-kicking for DraftKings. Now, if you ask me who the favorite was, it's Hale, who are you leaning towards, right? Ankalaev. I lean towards Ankalaev. Even though Anthony Smith told me that Rajic is by far the better guy, by far the more aggressive guy, by far the bigger and stronger guy, I lean towards Ankalaev. I think that he can find a way, but that's because Rajic is coming off a loss, and before that he was coming off an injury. Like, we just don't quite know what Rajic is going to be in there, but he was looking very good against Prohaska. As a matter of fact, he won the only completed round against Prohaska. Rajic was on his way to beating Prohaska, who came out of that fight, I'm talking Prohaska now, and went right into a world title fight. That would have been Rajic's world title fight, and he matches up really well with Pierre. I'm just reminding you guys who Rajic is, because you have seemed to forgot. I argue that you don't quite know Ankalaev the way that you think. He's awesome. You have that part right. Ankalaev is a effing problem. But he's not a wrestler, and you keep saying that he is. Just to let you know where you're getting this wrong. Ankalaev has a problem with urgency. And there's a really fine balance of which do you want. Do you want a guy that can relax in a moment? Do you want a guy that cannot feel the pressure of the moment? He's got ice running through his veins. Like, yes, you do. That is super, super important. And if a guy is too out there and he just burns out, it just doesn't work. Like, you need that Fedor-esque, that Uncle Iv-esque, where you can be relaxed in a moment. However, as the clock's ticking down, right, if you're a horse and you see the barn in sight, no matter how long you've been out running, you got to be able to sprint for it. And that is something Uncle Iv does not do perfectly well. He only got 3 rounds, guys. Of those 3, he's got to win 2. Rachik is really, really good. Here, let me put this in perspective for you, okay? When Islam and Charles fought, I know you guys love Charles. I see it too. When Islam and Charles fought, Charles had no chance. That was the matchup, a nightmare matchup ever. Charles tried to get out of that fight repeatedly. But that's true. That happened. There was no chance that Islam wasn't going to beat him. Islam was a 3-1 favorite. Okay? Just to put that in perspective for you. Islam, according to DraftKings, was less likely to beat Oliveira, who didn't want to fight him, than Rachik is to beat Uncle Iv. That line is right now. Guys, I'm telling you, that is... And what difference does it make? When the whole thing is said and done, whether the guy blew another guy out or he barely got by him, you go to the pay window, it's the same. That concept I do understand. I'm talking to something different. I'm talking about what a 380 is supposed to represent. I'm talking what a plus 300 is supposed to represent. It's representing a expected dominance, a expected finish. If you are expecting dominance and you are expecting a finish, you do not know who Rachik is. I can't tell you this in any clearer of words. He's the bigger of the two. He's less experienced. That's good. You don't get better in this sport. You want to get good at soccer? Go play a whole bunch of soccer. It's not like that in this sport. You leave a little piece of yourself out there. It gets taken from you. Your toughness depletes. I mean, it's one of these things. That's another thing that favors Rachik. He's younger. Are you aware of this? You need to rethink that, and you got days to do it. You need to rethink that big time. I'm not ready to tell you Rachik is going to win that fight, but I will guarantee you, as plainly as I know how to talk, Rachik can win that fight. And when someone's a plus 300 and they can win that fight, they only got to win 2 rounds. You got to give that a real good look. Oh my goodness, there's been about 5 times in my life where I will grab my phone and text Joe Silva, Mick Maynard, Sean Shelby, because I read a fight announcement. I'll read it, I'll pop, and I'll just, great job, thank you, anything like that. And they always give me, I get a thumbs up, or hey, glad you approve, or you know, I get some kind of a response. It becomes social, but I just did it. Jack Della Lama versus Kamaru Usman. What do you think of that, guys? That is a wild booking. That is a surprise booking. And it's going to be in Australia. I'd imagine, at least in theory, that is good for Jack. Now, my partners at DraftKings haven't come out with a line yet, but I want them to. And you better bet your ass it had better be for Kamaru Usman. And you know what? I don't think it will. I don't think so. I think if there's ever a time to go in and consider using that Chael promo code and putting your $5 down, it's going to be on this one. Kamara's going to win that fight. But before we get to that, 2 things, okay? First off, who's the favorite? Secondly, is it a main event? I don't know. See, what Kamara's going to beat him, but I'm real sure he beats him if we got 3 rounds. 5 rounds, historically, has been better for Kamara. I'm just sharing later in life, later in career, for sure, 3 over 5. And I don't know if it's a main event. In fact, I'm saying it to the voice of God, if you will, Ryan. I think he's looking for it now. That's what we don't know. It's the only fight that they have announced. So it makes you think it's the main event, but that hasn't been confirmed.
It's not announced. It's a rumor.
Not announced. It's not official. Not official. Okay, let's look into why this is a surprise, all right? Now, I have been over here lobbying as best as I can lobby with the biggest voice and the most subscribers in this space for Kamara for a title fight. And I didn't have any of you telling me that was crazy. I didn't. I did have some of you that were supporting Rachmanov in front of that. For the people that were against the idea of the Kamara title fight, it's because Kamara had his time. The offering and opportunities for Kamara have already happened. Let's get somebody new in there. Okay, great. Now we want to know what side, where's the organization sit on that? They're going to give him the title fight or they're going to give him nothing. You're going to stall him out. You're going to use him on a short notice. You're going to bump him up a weight class. What difference does it make? And we just saw this tested, guys. We saw this tested twice in the last 12 months. And I don't want you to miss it. Max Holloway can stop anybody, including becoming champion. But he's had so many opportunities. Get his ass out of the division. Just take him and book him in a fight that no one's thought about, wanted, or talked about, but you're pretty confident it'll be a good fight. That's what they did with him. That's what they did with the guy who was one of the top draws, who's 1 week and one win away from being two-time reigning champion. He's going to have champ status. All right. Well, that's what they did with Kamaru Usman. It was the same thing. Yeah, Kamaru Usman at 170 pounds. He can beat anybody, including win the championship. But he's had so many opportunities, and the parity simply doesn't work. And this is at the time that Leon's on top, the time of the story that I'm giving you, which is October of last year. You took Kamaru's ass. You moved him right out of the division. Put him at 185, where a guy is so successful, he's a problem to have in the division. And I got to talk about these two together, right? Because Ilya Topuria, as great as he's proven to be, but Ilya Topuria's path was unlike anybody else's path to a championship in that it did not go through Max. You got two sides of a bracket. Volkanovski clearing out one side, Max clearing out the other. And the challenger's got to come from the other, which means they got to go through Max. UFC found a way to get a guy in Topuria to a title shot that didn't involve Max, and for a while, we got to explain where Max is. They moved him out of the goddamn division. Same thing they did with Kamaru Usman. Okay, so if Kamaru gets a title fight, Chael wins, everything's great. If Kamaru doesn't get a title fight, we now know that the UFC's time of being in the Kamaru Usman belief and contender and potential champion business is behind us. Well, not so fast. Not so fast. They put him in there with Jack. Jack is on an incredible roll right now. Jack is on the tip of people's tongue. Jack is one of my personal favorite fighters to watch. He's nasty, and I don't know just how good he is. I know on his feet, this guy's as tough as day-old salami. As far as the wrestling goes, I haven't seen it, but I know he can defend himself. Even if he can't do the wrestling offensively, I know that he can do it defensively. Like, I'm just sharing for you. I don't even know how good Jack is, and I know he's a top five guy in the world. So if you're going to put Kamara against Jack, who's on a run, and Jack, I don't look at the rankings, guys, but I have seen him. I think Jack's five. If I'm wrong, he's six. He's four, Ryan? He's four. So you're going to take Kamara Usman. You're going to put him with the number four guy. If you're not going to put him with number one, what in the hell are you doing putting him with number four? Well, hold on, guys. Unless there was a third option here. Maybe it wasn't all or none for Kamara. Maybe when I was over here screaming at the top of my lungs, put Kamara in against Blahl. Because the other option is, we're done with Kamara. More figuratively than literally, but it's over for Kamara. Well, no, maybe there's a third option. It looks like there was. Which is Kamara. Did a great job in your last two. You were very competitive with two of the best guys on earth. But you did lose them both. So let's keep you where you should be, which is a contender. Forget about your age. Forget about your opportunities. Forget about all that stuff. Let's keep you where you should be, where your ranking support. A little better for Jack in some ways. Jack is number four. And again, I don't know what Kamara is, but I know he's either three or he's two. I think he was ranked in front of Rachmanov. Guys, please don't correct me on this. I'm trying to mirror it's like a feel. A little bit more of a feel and a point here. There's two separate sets of rankings. You guys get told there's one, which is the top 10. There's two. The top five versus 6 through 10 is a totally different deal. They've only gone outside of the top five twice on purpose. In a meaningful amount of time. Roundtree got one of those. Strickland got one of those. Strickland shocked the world. Roundtree shocked the hell out of you for over 10 minutes. So, the fact that they're going with Jack against Kamara, it's a very interesting proposition. It would be very difficult for me to see Kamara winning and not being given an opportunity. What would that opportunity be? Guaranteed title fight? Nah. Right in there. Yeah. Yeah, his name would be at the table. We use the expression table. We're talking about when they go sit down, they got three guys, and let's figure out who we're going to give it to. Yeah, he would be in those three guys. You bet he would. I think he was in those three guys for those last one that favored Rachmaninoff. I think that Kamaru Usman to go into a backup position. I think those are opportunities. So what exactly would happen with him? And he's still got to deal with Jack. But I'm telling you right now, I mean, that's a bad matchup for Jack. That really is my opinion. I'm open to listening. Is it going to be five rounds? Is it going to be three rounds? I think there's some real interest here. We'll see where DraftKings is going to come out on that, but I'm going to make you a prediction. Kamara's going to win that fight, and DraftKings is going to favor Jack. Who is the best heavyweight in the world? I'm going to start by telling you what Daniel Cormier said. Tom Aspinall. Now, does that surprise you? For Tom to even be in the talk, right? And there's certain guys that have an opinion that matters more, right? Daniel Cormier, being the heavyweight for the champion of the world for as long as he was and associated for it as long as he was, because don't forget, when Kane had the belt, which was an entire era, Daniel was associated. He was in Kane's corner. He was working out with him every day. He himself removed himself from the weight class so that he and Kane did a cross. You want to know the best way to start a day? Right there. Right there. I literally look forward to Jocko every day. Ethan puts him in a cooler over here. Brings me one. Oh my gosh. I got to have a quick sip, guys. I feel different. There's a placebo effect, right? When you know you're getting clean energy. Okay. Now, he went with Tom Aspinall. And he laid out his case. The power of Tom, the size of Tom, the youth of Tom, and he gave Tom a nudge in front of John because John is at a choice. And that choice is a very difficult one. It is very difficult to choose to sacrifice and to struggle and to be punched and kicked about the head, neck, and face in practice on a daily basis. If that isn't something that you have to do, and Tom, as great as he is and as new as he is, to Daniel's point, is an interim champion. He's been associated with the pay-per-view one time. That was the fight with Curtis Blaydes, which from what we're told was not some blockbuster night, right? He's not getting a Alex Pereira style check yet. And Daniel thought that made Tom dangerous. I think Daniel makes a fair point. We brought this up, of course, on the eve or on the heels of Francis Ngannou putting on a remarkable performance. Now, I come from a Francis analysis to you openly as a hater. Okay, I'm watching Francis to see him fail. I'm watching to see him have a weakness. And it makes for a very hard day for me. Because not only did Francis not have those things, which he should have. Francis should not have put on what I believe to be his best performance. After taking a break from doing the sport, oh, by the way, going and doing a different sport, oh, by the way, being completely distracted for a number of months where he did nothing. That was known as a knee surgery. He then suffers a tremendous tragedy in the loss of his son. That's going to pull his efforts in the practice room back. I mean, there was all sorts of, not to mention, we don't know how old he is. There was a time he was fighting, he was 36 years old. I'll meet you partway. He was at least 36 old. Oh, by the way, that was a long time ago. So I'm just sharing for you, like, as great as he's done and as special of a DNA as he was blessed with, he's not going to win this fight against a younger Fajera who, by the way, has the same natural attribute and benefit that Francis has. All of Francis's advantages are gone. That size, that strength, that length, that youth, that courage, that willingness to step in there and engage, they're all nullified. He's fighting the same guy. So for Francis to go out, time it. He times. If you go back and you watch that tape, he comes right under Ferreira's jab. He times that double. He gets in perfect position. He shows an advancement in his wrestling. Then his groundwork and his size, and he slowed things down. He was not afraid if that crowd was going to start booing or that ref was even going to threaten and bring him up. He was going to slow things down to maintain that position. He turns him towards the fence. I mean, this stuff you've got to work on a lot. I trained with Randy for a decade. Francis is now training with Randy for the better part of a decade, and I could just see, I know where you got that. Okay, I know where you learned that. And this is one of the best takedown artists, Randy Couture, followed by the positional ground and pound that there's ever been. And I could just see that Francis is working on those things. I could see that he's curious. I could see that he's getting better. These guys don't get better at that age. They don't get better when they went and focused on something else. He appears to have gotten better. But he wasn't who I put forward, by the way. My offering in the best heavyweight, you want to know who I went with? And I got knocked out of the room by Daniel. He hated this. I went with Pereira. And I went with Pereira, who has never fought in the heavyweight division, but I went with them for a number of reasons. Heavyweight is at a very different spot. So is the sport as a whole. This sport was proven in 1993 and backed up all along the way to favor grapplers. Holly Holm came in. And maybe even before Holly, I should go to Jose Aldo. It's hard to go to Jose as a pure striker because he's got a black belt in jiu-jitsu. But if you go watch his fights, Jose did that whole run with striking. Conor McGregor came in, took that helm from him. Conor did it all with striking. Conor never took anybody down, not on purpose. You had a Holly Holm come in. Kickboxer. Boxer. Takes out a grappler. Breaks every rule that we know from 1993. I mean, you literally had to go back to Maurice Smith versus Mark Coleman to find somebody as pure of a striker against as pure as a grappler of Holly versus Ronda. Okay. But then you have Israel Adesanya. Then you have Sean Strickland, who people credit as a grappler. He's not. Dricus du Plessis, who did Greco-Roman wrestling. I put him in a striking category. Obviously, Israel Adesanya, and I move on to Alex Pereira, but not only... And the reason I'm bringing this to you guys is whoever you're going to say is the best heavyweight right now, you would also have to say is the best striker at heavyweight right now. You'd have to. There is not only not a top 20 guy in the organization that was an NCAA All-American, there's not even an NCAA All-American on the roster. Are you aware of that? There is not only not an Olympic or world participant or somebody with those aspirations that live that life in the top 10, there's not anybody that fits that bill on the roster. It is a striker's world right now, like largely we have never seen or even predicted, and that's where I come with Pereira. That's where I come with Pereira. Errol had made an argument about John Jones. And he said, I'm not stating for you that John isn't the greatest of all time. That's a different conversation. I'm not actually touching it. This is Ariel talking. He says, I'm just talking about right now. It would be impossible to make that statement because he's only fought 4 minutes in 4 years. It's an interesting point. Now, we haven't seen anything from those 4 minutes that would disqualify John Jones from anything other than absolute greatness. But it's a fair point. If you're talking about right now, and it's a microcosm, I don't know how much you can bring Francis into it, regardless of how great he looked. That was one MMA fight dating all the way back to his time in the UFC that was, guys, what are we at here when he fought Ciryl Gane? We had 2 years? Ciryl's had enough time to go and do 3 fights, pull out of a fight, and make a movie, right? I mean, what are we at, two years? And then you have John with one performance. I mean, it is a very interesting thing. I think it probably does come down to Aspinall and Pereira, and then that's just a pick 'em. Daniel went one direction, I went another, but it's food for thought. It's food for thought. And I would like a brief assessment, please. Two sentences at most. Get your thought out quickly, but leave me a comment. Who's the best heavyweight right now? Please don't do just popularity. Who's the best heavyweight right now, and why? All right, everybody. I have had it with you all. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate that I know you will be back for more on Friday. Guys, I am going on the road. I got a trip coming to Florida. I got Patrick Bet David tomorrow morning. I got Greg Gutfield on Wednesday night. Busy week for Old Chael. And then I will be in Bristol, Connecticut, calling the fights for you coming from Abu Dhabi. I'll be back here on this channel to recap it all. Until Friday, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.